What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp. This is the Backstage Report podcast. For those of you that are new, this is about 20 minutes of exclusive news that you will only find at FightfulSelect.com, or that was broken here. And hey, if you want to look at past editions or really anything, while we're on the Patreon platform at least, there are tags that you can go through and separate each show via Q&A or Backstage Report or Sour Graps or whatever that may be that you're trying to hunt down. Also, they have a nifty search feature. But when we move to Fightful.com with this service, boy, will you have better sortability options moving forward. Let's go ahead and get into the Fightful Wrestling Weekly, which dropped on Select last night. It drops on Fightful tomorrow. Lots of stuff coming out from the WWE world. I have heard from multiple sources that the recent WWE call-ups have not received new contracts. And I mean dating back to WrestleMania time. The contracts have not been updated to reflect the main roster moves. And the justification for that is a little bit understandable, but many of them are actually working lighter schedules than they were in NXT before the pandemic started. And one source high up in WWE told us the topic of extending contracts or offering new ones will likely be broached when things, quote unquote, return to normal, though that is much easier said than done. WWE has no idea what their live event schedule will even look like when that happens, or even if they'll have one outside of TV. We've heard that Angel Garza may have been an exception to that rule, but his debut happened shortly before the COVID-19 era, which slowed those new contracts down. However, I have heard of some NXT talent that were getting some really good pay, and I'm going to follow up on that to try to see if I can get like an approximate amount. But when the USA contract or the USA TV deal came up, a lot of the NXT wrestlers got offered new deals with significant raises. Not all of those people re-signed. Most of them that didn't either got released or some got brought up to the main roster, like Vanessa Bourne and Riddick Moss, I believe. I don't know if they signed those deals. I don't think Riddick did, but he was brought up to the main roster and is where he is. But there are not new contracts being handed out in the COVID era for NXT talent, at least as things stand right now. And now, I get it, because there are a lot of these wrestlers that got called up, and they're working once every week, once every 2 weeks. They're not doing the traveling. They're not doing a lot of that stuff. So I'm not opposed to WWE not handing out new contracts when they're... I'm not saying they have it pretty good. Nobody has it pretty good in this situation. Nobody that is risking their health and their family's health has it good, but I do understand why they're not like, okay, well, we're going to bump you up to $500,000 or $600,000. Now, if there are people that are making like $100,000, $150,000, $200,000, then yeah, I'd probably want that bump up. Raw edits. We are told that the emotional finish of WWE Raw last week went way longer than what we actually saw on TV. Several of those in attendance said that the Randy Orton promo was much more than actually got broadcast, and said that there were minutes of material that did not end up getting used. When we spoke to others in WWE, I was told that it was an edit simply to fill time and didn't have anything to do with quality, and that Orton cut his usual awesome promo, and they simply did not have time to fit it all in. But I gotta say, from a personal perspective, the way they edited it, the way it came off, whether there was more to it or not, it's one of the best segments I've seen in wrestling in recent memory. It was emotional. It was a roller coaster. It was incredible. So hats off to WWE, Randy Orton, Ric Flair, everybody who had anything to do with that. They knocked it out of the park. It was incredible. Over on SmackDown, some SmackDown talent got word to me that they got their eyes on a depth chart. And since I published that, I had even more reach out. So I'll tell you about that in a minute. But this was a few weeks ago, before Braun Strowman did the double heel turn. But there were eyes on a SmackDown depth chart. Now, I got to let you all know, it didn't have Daniel Bryan listed on it. He's been at home lately. But Braun Strowman was listed as the top babyface on the brand. Jeff Hardy followed it second. who is now in the Intercontinental title program, and Matt Riddle was listed behind him in third. I would be led to believe, or I shouldn't say that. I wasn't led to believe. I would believe this was also before Big E got his singles push as well. So we'll see how all that hashes out. But they also got eyes on the heel depth chart, which I'll have on Fightful Select this week. Ain't hard to figure out. Pretty common sense what those are and kind of where everybody falls in that regard. I was told the filming for the last set of Raw Underground segments, which was 2 weeks ago, went much smoother than the first batch that were all taped that same day, and a source told us that they found their footing and were still producing content past 1 a.m. at those tapings. Let me tell you, even though I was told that things went smoother, it did not reflect it in what I saw last Monday. That was not good. Velveteen Dream, his return was kept very private, with most wrestlers only knowing about it minutes ahead of last Wednesday's NXT. Quite frankly, Velveteen Dream is not liked backstage in NXT, and that is of his own doing. There's been heat on him for behavioral issues and what is perceived as preferential treatment in multiple situations that would have had most anybody else fired. This was also the case with his return. WWE have not provided any update on any disciplinary action taken towards him for any incidents or accusations, and former Fightful contributor David Bixenspan has been looking into his car punching incident, which I got to tell you has some very unique snags in it. The stuff that he is telling me about that, there's a lot of stuff that does not add up, and there's a lot of weird things going on there. AEW, they had a number of fans who were invited to the show. It was not available for ticket purchase last week. Tony Khan came out to encourage the crowd to be loud and rowdy without using profanity, #FTF. Masks were being strictly enforced, with people patrolling the crowd to make sure that masks were up when they weren't eating or drinking. And though television production made it look like the fans were all grouped together, this was done by design as an illusion of sorts, and the fans were spaced out several rows apart from other groups. There was a thermal temperature scanner that was done before entering the venue one at a time, and a waiver was signed to ensure that nobody that entered had been sick. There were also other prohibited areas taped off to make sure that people didn't get into rows that they weren't supposed to. But that's hardly it for the AEW news. Jeff Cobb, he said that he did feel like the belle of the ball when everybody was making him offers, and said that WWE did make contact with him during his free agency period, but Impact Wrestling did not, which kind of surprised me, considering Impact Wrestling has had such a big free agency period. But I also talked to him about his time in AEW, and he said that he feels like things were good there. Now, this is just me being an amateur psychologist, so to speak. Based on his reaction, it doesn't seem to me like AEW is the place that he signed, because he said that he felt like things were good there, and I would imagine that he would know that things were good there if he signed. But he said that where he signed, it was up to them to announce that he had signed there. But he thinks very highly of All Elite Wrestling. And we asked about some of the rumored dates that were tied to the agreement, and he said that he just wasn't excited to travel to Florida with how Florida has handled the pandemic. And I can't blame him. It's a mess. It's a mess. So why would you want to and risk your health and your family's health and make that trip from Vegas? Don't blame him whatsoever. Don't blame him. Jimmy Havoc. Oh, boy. So Thursday, Jimmy Havoc's profile disappeared from AEW's website, as Trevor noted on Twitter. And multiple sources have told us that Jimmy Havoc was done with the company, though additional details were few and far between. Several wrestlers noted that at the tapings on Thursday, word going around was that Havoc was out of AEW, and it should be noted that wrestlers nor media were given official word on his status, and I did reach out to Tony Khan, I reached out to AEW, reached out to a lot of people, and didn't get any word back on this. Havoc has been out of action since many allegations surfaced regarding him during the Speaking Out movement in June, and he was to attend rehab immediately and has been let go. Many of the wrestlers that we spoke to said that he was probably going to be let go regardless. But we did reach out to All Elite Wrestling about Jimmy Havoc, Bea Priestley, Sadie Gibbs. Sadie Gibbs would confirm her release. We've talked a lot about heat on this show. There was some heat after Sammy Guevara's spot with Matt Hardy a couple weeks ago where he tossed a chair into Matt Hardy's face. Here's the thing. Sammy was supposedly very apologetic about it and clearly did not intend to do that. He didn't want to bust open Matt Hardy. And nobody that I spoke to in AEW thought that the spot was intentional. But many thought that it was reckless, especially considering it was during a taped show. I'd heard that the usually mild-tempered Matt Hardy was very heated after the incident and felt lucky that it wasn't worse than it ended up being. Again, there was heat on Guevara afterwards, and I was told that the scene was chaotic 2 weeks ago. Even though Guevara apologized, a lot of people thought that that should have been handled a different way, and I get it. Man, Sammy's had a I don't know how to categorize that. He's had a very crazy few months between his suspension and coming back and this happening and the Matt Hardy feud getting stopped and started and stopped and started. And I'm told that Matt Hardy is okay, but he is dealing with a few issues from the fallout of that because he was very shocked that that happened. And the heat's understandable. The heat's understandable. Talked to Tama Tonga. That was a hell of an interview. Man, he is full of laughs. What a great person to talk to, and one that I haven't been able to talk to before. He told me that he very much considers Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows still full-fledged members of Bullet Club. Gallows and Anderson did not get kicked out of Bullet Club. They just quietly left. I don't know if they quietly left. They went to WWE. But Thomas said that it's blood in, blood out. You got to be kicked out of Bullet Club. So what you're saying on Wikipedia, I get it. They're not in New Japan. And New Japan owns Bullet Club. But who's to say that they're out of Bullet Club? Tama Tonga invented Bullet Club with these people. So how can we sit there and say, oh, well, they're out of Bullet Club then? Especially when a team like that transcends brands and companies. I just gotta say, I think it should be up to Tama Tonga, not some Wikipedia dorks. I did say, hey, Scott D'Amore didn't get kicked out. Is he still in it? And he says Scott D'Amore is only an honorary member, so maybe he needs to toss out some honorary ass kickings. He was excited to rest and heal up, but was worried that he would not have a job after the first couple of months of the pandemic. And his routine is a little out of whack after going to Japan for so long, but he was enjoying the adjustment. He wants to get back to New Japan, but is very happy working in New Japan Strong, and said that sometimes he gets a little heat from New Japan for cursing on the air, and they ask him to stop. However, it's always a respectful conversation, and by now, New Japan sort of already knows what they have there. Tama does not regret passing on WWE whatsoever, because a part of the thing that kept him in New Japan was the ability to work with his brother, who had just been fired by WWE not long before that. So he wasn't about to go to a place where his brother had been fired a year and a half before. Well, he was about to go there, but not over the idea of him possibly working with his brother, which is what happened. And he said that it was a dream come true and something that he wanted to do. And it was very important to him. I asked him about the possibility of New Japan working with other companies, because that's constantly a topic that gets brought up, and he said that he sees Harold May's vision, but has not seen it executed yet, but to maybe give him another year or two, because he's been at it for a couple of years already. Now, on the subject of working with other companies, Tama laid out the best argument that I have seen anybody lay out for why New Japan does not trust people very well. And made me see it from their point. And the thing is, Tama is cool with most of these companies and people. But he said, okay, well, look at it. All Elite Wrestling was started by a lot of guys that New Japan helped make. And I get that. They didn't feel there was a sense of loyalty there. So, and that's big in New Japan. Said that there's no respect in wrestling in that regard. So AEW got started by Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, even Cody to a degree, came over there and was given a big push, et cetera, et cetera. Chris Jericho was given a lot of stuff, but not hardly built there. You know what I mean? WWE went and tried to sign like half a dozen New Japan names in 2016 and ended up getting four or five of them. How many times have we seen TNA and Impact screw over New Japan? Switching titles without New Japan's blessing, the booking of Okada, then when Anthem kicked New Japan off access, that doesn't look real great. Now, I did bring up Davey Boy Smith saying that he wanted to go to Impact last year, and New Japan was like, no, Jeff Jarrett, he screwed us over, Okada, all that stuff. Jeff Jarrett ain't there. There's no reason to even worry about that. But Thomas says that that issue is probably with the Global Force wrestling dealings. Like, there was some fallout there as Global Force helped co-promote a New Japan pay-per-view. And while the regimes are different, this regime of Impact did kick New Japan off TV. So, understandable. And then there's Ring of Honor. And they did have shows planned in April. But quite frankly, after last April, it did not look like they were going to continue that. It looked like maybe that was done. And New Japan was going to start their own thing. Well, Tama was in the ring when Enzo and Cash showed up without them knowing it. And he said that that's a reason why you can't trust people in that situation either. And I completely agree. It's hard for me to disagree with that, especially when New Japan is doing so well on their own. So as much as I would love to see New Japan co-promote, Tama laid out a pretty good explanation for me. Injury updates, contract updates. Oh boy. So, Jimmy Havoc was released, Bea Priestley, it appears, was released, and Sadie Gibbs confirmed that she was released. Chris Jericho said that he credited Tony Khan for doing all he could to keep some of those people overseas under contract as long as he could, and said that Sadie was about to move over here and had a lot of upside, and there were just some timing issues with some of these people, but from what I understand, Jimmy Havoc was probably going to go anyway, so he's gone. Jeff Cobb told me again why he hadn't been back to AEW. Did not reveal where he had signed. Tongaloa's deal goes into summer 2020, but I'll have more on that very soon. It was put out there on, I think maybe PW Insider reported that Josh Alexander's deal was up after Ethan Page's, but we've known that because Josh Alexander, by his own admission, signed a 3-year deal in early 2019, and Fightful's had that on our contract expiration form for quite a while, so not a lot of new news there. Davey Boy Smith is still under MLW contract. His deal is up in December. He wants out of there. He told me straight up he wants out of that company. Returns. Mickie James is back in action. She's wrestling tonight. Great to see her back. We'd not seen Mickie James wrestle since June 1st, 2019. Here's the thing. Her last match before that was WrestleMania. Her last match before that was in February 2019. So since February 10th, 2019, the last 18 months, Mickie James has only wrestled twice. Get her back in the ring. If you can't find something for her to do, move her to SmackDown where they desperately need her. Carmella was not in the Tri-Brand Battle Royal this past week that featured a lot of former enemies of Bayley. She has not wrestled since Money in the Bank, which was filmed in April. Kushida, Kyle O'Reilly, Shane Thorne, all back in action on NXT. Kona Reeves reveals that he had labrum surgery in March. Here's to hoping that he gets better soon. I think he has a lot of upside without the finest gimmick and all that shit, but I think he's a lot better than a lot of people give him credit for. Chelsea Green has not wrestled since May. Outside of WWE, Rachel Ellering finally returned after over a year gone, and Vanessa Craven has announced that she has left wrestling. All the best to her for that. You hate to see anything like that, though. Let's hit you with some stats for the week. Zelina Vega competed in her first match since April 6th, where she competed against Bianca Belair twice. Bianca is unbeaten in her three matches against Zelina. There were at least 182 camera cuts during their match. Shelton Benjamin had not won an in-ring singles match on Raw since a 2006 win over Super Crazy before Monday. Leva Bates has no televised wins since November and no wins in AEW without Nyla Rose as a partner. Cody Rhodes is now 9-0 in TNT Championship matches since May 28. Natalya has the WWE Women's record for most matches with 1,360, most wins with 631, most pay-per-view matches with 51, most televised matches with 467, and most televised wins with 224. Tamina wrestled for the first time since Money in the Bank on SmackDown. Carmella, as mentioned, has not been seen since either. Scorpio Sky suffered his first singles loss of 2020 on AEW Dynamite. AEW has now had as many COVID-era shows as non-COVID-era shows. You could argue that the Battle Royal was the seventh match in the feud between Ruby Riott and the Iconics. And AJ Styles and Jeff Hardy started off their feud. Their last one-on-one match was in July 2013 in TNA. And this is with them being in WWE both since at least the beginning of 2017, over 3.5 years. That's all I got, guys. Until next time, tell the people you love Fightful Select. I can't tell you how much that helps us out. Message boards, tweets, Facebook. We really need help on Facebook. Until next time, guys, we're out.